It's a fisher cat, he asked. A martin.
Like a bird? A bird tried to eat our chickens?
That's a martin with an I. This is a martin with an E. It's like a badger or weasel, and it's after our egg source. She removed her coat. It didn't get in, but there were scratches on the door and concrete floor.
Can we catch and eat them, these martins? Greg asked. We could use some meat.
I guess. We can read about them in the library. I would assume, since they're coming after our chickens, we can set a trap for whatever it is. She stood by the fire. I like your new attitude. Let's eat and walk into town, he said as he sat up on his mattress. The real estate office was a useless exercise and took up the entire morning. They accepted defeat and walked slowly to their house for lunch.
I thought we'd find some place, she told him.
They were at the top of Choate Road and about to make a left towards their home when Greg stopped.
Wait, I have an idea, he suddenly blurted.
I'm not moving. What do you mean, wait? Rebecca enjoyed using Greg's sarcasm.
Funny, he said, acknowledging her attempt. During one of my summer visits, I had to go to this museum. My mom never let us just hang out. She always wanted to do something, you know, give us culture, whatever. Anyway, there's a cottage, Daniel Webster's house or something like that. It's a museum, kept in the old style, fireplaces, wood stove. I think it all still works, too.
Are you serious?
Why didn't we start there?
Greg looked at her.
Because I didn't think of it until now, that's why. I assumed my father was sending me to the best place.
So where is this museum?
Greg turned and pointed to a white sign 20 feet away.
It's right there.
Rebecca smiled and held up her hand for a high five before turning and walking to the front of the tiny museum.
It's a 2-story house, but it's small. You can tell it doesn't have 10-foot or probably even 8-foot ceilings. This house was built to heat from a fireplace or wood stove, and to keep heat in the rooms. Look how small the windows are.
Rebecca made initial observations. Don't forget, we can move and use our own furniture. We're just looking for heat and cooking sources. We can move rain barrels to collect water, and if you don't think I'm going back to that house and getting that awesome couch, you are wrong.
Did you sit on that green one?
OMG, it was so comfortable. Incredible. I liked that small dining table they had in the sunroom, too. It was perfect for 2 or 4 chairs.
Rebecca continued to talk about furniture as they made their way to the front door.
The door was unlocked.
That's a good sign, Greg said to her as he pushed it open.
The front opened into a small mudroom with benches on either side. It was set up for guests or owners to sit and remove their muddy boots before entering the house. It kept warm air in the house and cold air outside.
This is kind of like a spaceship airlock. You have to close the outside door before you get into the main ship, Greg said as they entered the house.
What are you talking about? Rebecca responded. Are you telling me that you're actually a sci-fi geek?
You were able to keep it a secret, but now it's out there.
You're a geek. The whole world dies, and I get stuck with a 14-year-old Trekkie.
Whatever, Greg smiled back. I'm not a geek, and I refuse to be called a geek by a 13-year-old college freshman. If you want to step up and get measured on the nerdoscale, be my guest.
The second door opened into a short hall. To the left was a living room furnished with old-style chairs and a couch. To the right was an open door leading into a bedroom with an old-fashioned 4-poster bed. A fireplace was visible on the far wall of the bedroom. The ceilings were low. The 2 rooms were small. It was dim in the house, partly because of the small rooms and low ceilings, but also because the windows in each room were tiny with deep window boxes.
The bedroom has a fireplace. We could put twin beds in there and it will be perfect.
Rebecca sounded hopeful. A staircase led to a second floor. It was a steep staircase that was shorter than a modern set needed to accommodate 10-foot ceilings and ductwork between floors.
Greg ignored the stairs, turning to his left and into the living room. A fireplace with a wood storage cutout sat in the center of the wall. 3 small windows let in light, trapped heat, and kept cold air out.
The windows were old, with wrought iron panes separating imperfect glass. The walls were thick. The glass was set on the far side of 8 or 10 inch window frames.
This is another great room. These windows could use some help. Have you ever seen the plastic stuff at the hardware store you can put up on windows to keep drafts out? We need a hairdryer to finish the job. I bet we can figure something out.
Greg used the plastic insulation in his dorm room last winter, preventing the draft in the old dorm window from blowing on him at night.
I'm getting that couch from the other house. This stuff is all hitting the curb.
Rebecca shook her head. Greg got the sense she had already decided on the house. Instead of inspecting each room for viability, she was redecorating.
"So you think this is a fit?" Greg asked her.
"If the kitchen has a wood stove, you've struck gold. This house is perfect, literally perfect for living through a no-electricity Hanover winter. Did you notice the house next door has about a cord of firewood stacked against the outside of the house? It looks like a dorm or something. Whatever it is, that starts our wood collection."
"I haven't seen a wood stove. Let's hold off on declaring this our new house. It does seem pretty perfect, though. If we hang one of our wool blankets to block off the second floor, we can keep even more heat on the first floor."
At the far end of the living room, there was an archway into a dining room. The opening between the rooms was the size of a door, not like a modern home with the entire wall removed for an open concept. Another door on the far wall looked into a study. It was a small room with a desk and bookshelves. They would shut the door and leave that room closed in the winter, use it for wood storage if necessary. The dining room was a good size, with its own fireplace. On the other side of the dining room was an open door that led into a kitchen. Greg saw a wood stove and a large farm sink.
"I think we've found our new home. Check out the stove. It has an oven on the side, 4 burners on the top. We're in business. We should try to start fires in each fireplace. Make sure these are all working heat sources, then walk back and get the van. Starting fires means we come back to a warm house. It's a little chilly and damp in here."
Greg walked around the dining room table and into the kitchen as he spoke. There was a pantry to the side of the kitchen, and a back door that led to a large sunroom they could use to store wood. Rebecca looked down at her watch. It was 1 p.m. There would not be time to get the additional furniture today. They needed to make fires, get the van, unpack food, boil water, and get settled for their first night.
"I don't think we'll be able to get the single beds and the couch today. Let's focus on the basics. We'll start the fires and unload the van supplies into the pantry. We'll do a full house setup tomorrow."
"Hey, Greg," she said to him as they walked back to the front room to check the flue and light the pre-made fire left by the museum staff.
"Yes?"
"This was a great find, and a better situation than we left at my house in Concord. You probably saved us for the winter."
There was no sarcasm in her voice. She wanted him to know that he was the hero.
"Thanks. I think this house will work out. I mean, it already has fires made in every fireplace. It's destiny or fate or whatever you want to call it."
He moved cobwebs and heard a creak from the hinges as he pushed open the flue of the fireplace in the living room. The fireplaces and wood stove worked. Greg and Rebecca spent the rest of the day unloading supplies and moving wood from the house next door onto a covered side porch of the Webster cottage. They constructed the chicken coop next to the back door of the kitchen. The birds were happy to be free from their small cages, clucking and scratching around their new home. The sun set at 6 p.m. Greg made dinner while Rebecca made camp in the living room. They fell asleep in sleeping bags on top of a woven rug next to a roaring fire, exhausted from the stress and work of the day.
21. Greg's eyes opened to a dimly lit room. The sun rose on the kitchen side of Webster Cottage. The living room was bright in the afternoon and dark in the morning. He could hear Rebecca in the kitchen. He rolled over and got out of his sleeping bag. The fire kept the room warm through the night. He checked the outdoor thermometer they set up the night before. 28 degrees. Not too bad an indoor temperature for a freezing outside temperature. He walked towards the kitchen, rubbing his eyes. He swung open the door to find Rebecca boiling water. The kitchen temperature was above 70 degrees. "We only have 2 eggs. The gals are upset after the move." "I suspected as much. Ramen noodles with scrambled egg for protein. That should get us going." She spoke while concentrating on the stove before looking over her shoulder at Greg. "And you need to make some bread for dinner. I want my morning toast tomorrow."
"You're in a good mood. We have a lot of work to do today. Why so chipper?"
Greg enjoyed the light-hearted Rebecca and wondered why she was cooking.
"We're in Hanover. We found a great house. Your family is going to show up in a few months. This is the best scenario we could have hoped for when you ran into me a week ago. It might be our best scenario possible when the world ended, period. Sure, there are challenges ahead, but Team Rebecca Greg stumbled into a great find. If we fix the furniture situation, we'll be good until spring."
She was right. Things were looking up from when Greg slept under his cot at Hightower.
"I was thinking, you know, before I passed out from exhaustion last night."
He paused, deciding whether to mention his idea.
"Do you think we should light some kind of signal fire? Maybe when we're all set up? If there are other survivors in the area, we might be able to help them, and they might be able to help us."
Rebecca's rules were clear, and her number one rule was to trust no one.
"I don't know, Greg. I just don't know if that is a good idea. It's easy to think that everyone will be like us, friendly and helpful. What if they're not? What if we bring a desperate person, cold and hungry, and they see our house and our food and, well, they haven't been around a woman in a long time? I have more to worry about than you."
Greg could see fear in her eyes as she spoke. Rebecca did not appear to be afraid of anything, but rape was not just anything.
"Okay, I get it. It was just an idea. Let's work over the next few days, get our living situation finished, scout out the town, and then we can talk about it again. I would never do anything unless we both agreed."
Greg left the door open for further discussion. He believed adding people could help them survive. He also understood the risks involved with engaging strangers.
"First things first, we get our beds. We can use the van. I don't want to sleep on the floor for one more night."
"Agreed." Greg's back agreed, too. He was stiff after 2 days of loading and unloading supplies, driving, and sleeping on the floor. They ate breakfast and drove the van down Rope Ferry Road. They struggled mightily to load a green couch and 2 single bed frames into the van. They nabbed an additional leather couch when Greg declared he wanted his own napping spot for snowy afternoons. After the furniture was secured, they systematically grabbed the food neatly boxed by each front door. At the end of day 5, their house was set up with couches, beds, and enough firewood to last several weeks. They had a half of a tank of gas left in the van. Greg lit the fire in their bedroom and walked back into the warm living room. Rebecca sat on her green couch, contently watching the fire in the living room.
"I hope it doesn't get too hot in there. I like to sleep cold." "Not 30 degrees cold, but not hot either," Greg began.
"I doubt being cold will be an issue in a few weeks, particularly if the fire goes out while we're asleep," Rebecca said back to him.
"Man, is this couch comfortable. This is the nicest piece of furniture I have ever sat on. Seriously, hands down the nicest."
"I'm excited to sleep in a bed with sheets. It's been a while." Greg sat on his brown leather couch running parallel to Rebecca's and perpendicular to the fire. "Couches are comfortable, but those beds we picked up this morning, they looked really comfortable." 30 minutes later, they were tucked into their new, comfortable beds. The bedroom did not get too hot. Rebecca and Greg had been together for 2 weeks. It felt like summer camp, sleeping in twin beds next to a fire in a log cabin-type structure. They talked into the evening, facing each other, elbows bent, heads in hands.
"What do you miss most about the old world, aside from family and friends, of course?"
Greg wanted to know more about Rebecca's life.
"Well, I miss school, the structure of my life. I'm all about routine," she started. No, no, not that kind of stuff. I mean, what kind of frivolous thing do you miss?
I miss takeout food. I know that at private school I didn't have to cook, but the best nights were when a few buddies would order pizza and we'd get it delivered to the front entrance of the school. It would be hot and smell so good. We'd eat the pizza and tell other kids they couldn't have any and laugh and joke for hours. Ordering takeout with friends was one of my favorite things. That's what I'm asking. What do you miss that we're never going to be able to do again?
I miss going to the movies. I loved the movies. I had a subscription to Entertainment Weekly, and I was up to date on all the new releases, when the sequels were coming, who was starring in what. I loved Hollywood and movies. I would go on Sunday afternoons, always hitting the 2 p.m. showing of the latest release. I'd sneak in a box of candy, because my parents owned a store, and just soak them in. I don't like to think about never seeing them again. Because maybe we can get a projector working. It makes me sad. It's been 21 Sundays since I went to a movie.
That's a good one. I didn't think about movies. See, you probably didn't think about takeout food as something to miss. It's funny how we've grown up the same, but miss different things. Greg smiled at her. Rebecca was doing a long stare, looking through Greg.
I don't know how similar we grew up. I'm an only child, and my father ran our store most nights. He'd come home for dinner, that was a rule, but my mom and I spent a lot of time together. The three of us were close, a tight unit. At the end, when they knew they were going to die, and worse, that I was going to live, I think that was hardest on them. Can you imagine? Dying. And knowing your 13-year-old daughter is going to be alone in this harsh world?
She spoke in a distant voice, not necessarily to Greg.
Well, Greg said in response, my dad had to tell me to survive until he got here. I'm not comparing our two situations, because your parents are dead. I still believe my father is coming, but I think we have a similar story. Your parents knew you were going to live, and mine knows I'm alive, and he can't get to me for another 5 months. Both are agonizing situations. Both affect us, meaning you and me.
Rebecca came back from her stare and looked into Greg's eyes. She nodded. She thought about his father on the phone, telling his son to stay safe, stay alive. How horrible that must have been. Her parents are at peace. His father was alive somewhere, thinking about Greg constantly.
I'm a middle child. We get ignored. I'm sort of the opposite of you. I talk loudly to be heard. I speak my mind. I went away to school because I didn't want to follow my brother through high school, always living up to his accomplishments.
Greg yawned. Okay, Chatty Cathy, let's call it a night, Rebecca replied.
Sheesh, you do prattle on.
She said it with a smile. She spoke non-stop since he found her. She was surprised Greg's ears had not fallen off from her constant yammering.
I apologize for rambling, he said in a deadpan voice, before yawning again.
Good night, Greg.
Night, Rebecca.
See you in the morning.
And just like that, they fell asleep in their new lives together.
The room was warm when Rebecca woke up the next morning. Greg silently placed a log on the smoldering embers when he woke an hour earlier, and the fire came back to life, heating the room after he left. He was in the kitchen making breakfast. The back side of the house was warm from the wood stove. Rebecca walked in wearing a robe.
In our weeks together, you've never gotten up before me.
I thought I'd shake things up a little, Greg said back. I have French toast cooking in the oven, and warm tea if you'd like some. It's colder today, but you can see, the oven heats this room nicely. He handed her a mug of warm tea.
Thank you. Wow, get you a bed and you become a whole new person.
I'm excited to explore town today. I want to see what the condition of the area is. I need some new pants, and I want to see what supplies we can find. I bet there are some great lanterns at the hardware store we can use, and there are 3 or 4 sporting goods stores over in West Lebanon, about 5 miles away. There's even an L.L. Bean. There have to be solar power options for lights, and other stuff to make our lives more convenient. Greg was eager to get moving. Greg wanted to find an animal trap. Thanksgiving was in a few days, and he wanted to catch a turkey. He could keep it in the cage they used to transfer the chickens. He found some sweet potato vines growing in pots at a couple of the houses they passed, and he had bread for stuffing. He knew he could make a great feast for the two of them. Getting a turkey would be a great way to celebrate their new life. Okay? It was the second time Rebecca said, conveying her confusion at the new Greg she encountered that morning. "You know what I want to find?" she said after a few sips of her tea. "I want to see if we can catch some fish. I bet there are fish in that pond. Fresh fish? That would be great right now. That pond is going to freeze over in a little while if it hasn't over the last 2 nights. We need to find a fish and tackle shop. My grandfather belonged to a fishing club over the bridge in Vermont. I don't think I could find it, but if we got a map, there's a chance. It was some private lake stocked with rainbow trout. They almost jumped in the boat when we went. You can fish from the pier and catch some whoppers. I'm not a big trout guy, but fresh fish does sound good. I have this fish stew recipe that will knock your socks off." "All right. You know I like a plan. Let's eat and head over to L.L. Bean. I get to go shopping again. Let's think about getting a smaller car or SUV, too. The van is good for this trip, in case we want a canoe for the pond. I might grab a bike as long as we have the trunk available." "Don't we have to pay for things for it to be shopping? I mean, technically speaking. Aren't we just going to a place to pick stuff up more than shopping?" "You call it what you want. I'll call it what I want." She smiled at him as she poured syrup on her French toast. The house was coming together nicely. They had a table in the kitchen to enjoy meals in the warmth of the wood stove. There was no running water, but the kitchen had a large sink with a drain running to the outside. Rebecca set a small rain barrel on the counter next to the sink basin. As long as the barrel was more than a quarter filled with water, there was decent pressure out of the spigot to wash dishes and hands. They dressed warmly for the brisk 26-degree temperature outside. Rebecca drove the van towards town so they could take an inventory of the specific stores and supplies available within walking distance. They also wanted to see if initial appearances were true, and the town was intact, as their first view of the pristine town might have been inaccurate. Greg knew there was a back road to the shopping malls in West Lebanon, but he was not positive he could remember it. He wanted to drive through town before turning around and taking the highway they knew to the malls. "Let's drive down Main Street before we jump on the highway," Greg asked. "I want to see how the town looks. Maybe head over to the grocery store to see if they have any food." They drove through the center of town. It was abandoned and peaceful. All the store windows were intact, and some of the window displays were still up. "This joke might be lost on you, but this is the first time I've been in Hanover when I could get a parking spot." Greg laughed to himself, thinking of the endless circles his grandfather made in search of a parking spot in town. "It was usually busy. It seems like such a sleepy little town." "You have no idea. In the summer, you had all these college students, tourists, locals, all crowding the streets. There were kids our age. There were retired people. It was just people upon people. Then, the funny thing, there would be these random smelly hikers. The Appalachian Trail is right around here. These smelly people with beards and nasty clothes would be sitting around talking to each other right in the middle of town." Greg's thoughts of Hanover were fond, and driving down Maine reminded him of his grandparents. They both passed 2 years ago. It was a great place to visit. Greg kept talking as they drove. "We would come up for a week or two, spend it at my grandparents' lake cottage, fish, boat, and swim the entire time. We'd come into town and go to lunch or dinner, and sometimes we'd come during town events like the 4th of July. There would be a parade and activities on that square field, the one we passed before hitting town. It's called the Green." "That sounds fun," Rebecca said, acknowledging Greg as he continued. I was always bored when my mom would make us go on her cultural tours. We spent a day at this cow farm over in Vermont. It was like 100 years old or something like that. They had milking cows, chickens, lots of animals. It was fun for a little while, but you know, when you're a kid, that stuff gets boring pretty fast. He looked up towards the sky. Who knew that my mom would save my life with her boring tours? Finding Webster Cottage is all thanks to her. Like she was looking out for me. He continued looking up. Thanks, Mom. He smiled as he said it, thinking of her, how much he missed her, and how much he loved her when they were together. Greg was not paying attention. He was too caught up in his thoughts. He did not tell Rebecca to turn around before leaving town. They were 5 minutes outside of Hanover when Greg realized his mistake. Oh, wow, I'm sorry. We were supposed to turn, like, way back there. He looked around and saw they were entering the town of West Lebanon. Well, where are we? This is your area, Greg. Rebecca did not mind an adventure, and they could hardly get lost if they stayed on the same road. You know what? This is Lebanon, or West Lebanon. I'm not really sure of the difference. We're going to come to a Dunkin' Donuts at a fork in the road. Take the right fork and we'll run right into L.L. Bean in West Lebanon. This is the back way I didn't think I knew. They drove down Main Street in West Lebanon, a straight road with businesses on either side. The town was looted. Most of the shop windows were broken. One of the stores, the paint barn, was burned out. Black smoke stains clung to the side of the building around the front doors and broken windows.
What the heck? I haven't seen this anywhere else. I don't have a lot to compare it to, but I did walk by a few towns between Hightower and Concord. The state liquor store was looted for booze, but it wasn't ruined.
Greg worried about the stores in West Lebanon.
This was vandalism, not looting. Look at the spray painting on the paint barn. It's punks who did it, not looters. Who loots a paint store during an epidemic?
Rebecca pointed to the black words scarring the side of the building. The Lebanon Library was on their left. It, too, was covered in symbols and words. Its front doors were broken.
I heard about towns like this on the radio, Rebecca continued. If the police got sick, and no one was there to stand in for authority, the bad influences took control. There was some bad stuff going on all around New England. People realized there were no repercussions for their behavior. It got ugly quickly. Not a lot of places, but some. This part of Lebanon went to the mobs.
They did not see a sign of life. Despite the destruction, they could tell no one had been around for months. Leaves covered the ground, unmoved except for animal tracks. They arrived at the Dunkin' Donuts and a fork in the road. The donut shop was untouched by the violence.
I guess even mobs have their rules. Don't mess with the donuts, Rebecca said, surprised that one store would survive above all the others.
Should we make a joke about how all the police were probably at the donut shop and that's why it survived? Greg laughed at his own joke with a loud chuckle.
Nice, Rebecca complimented. Nice.
They turned right and headed towards the big box stores. Greg wanted to visit the high-end indoor mall. Up there on the left, that's the L.L. Bean and Sporting Goods store. He turned his head to examine this area of West Lebanon.
Everything looks fine here.
I bet the police drew a line in the sand at the Dunkin' Donuts. Maybe they decided these stores were more valuable. There are two groceries over here. Food must have been a priority. Greg was pleased to see this part of town was not burned to the ground. Rebecca became more animated when she pulled into the indoor mall.
I love L.L. Bean. There was an outlet in Concord. You could buy monogrammed stuff that people sent back, so if you didn't mind having someone else's initials on your luggage or backpack, you got a sweet deal. It was the best store.
They parked by the mall and got out of the van. Greg walked up and tried the entrance door. It was unlocked. He held it open for Rebecca and followed her inside. L.L. Bean was the first store, anchoring the mall on one end. Eastern Mountain Sports anchored the other. The roof of the mall was glass, Sunlight shone brightly throughout them all. "Brr," Rebecca said, as she rubbed her hands on her arms. "I bet it's 5 degrees colder inside than out. I'm not sure how long I'll last shopping in here." "I agree. Let's make quick work of this place." They tried the doors at the L.L. Bean store. They were locked. Greg went outside and picked up a large rock from the stream that ran next to the mall. He came back inside and threw the 15-pound stone through the glass door. "Don't call the police," he said to Rebecca, as he kicked the jagged glass away from the frame. "Don't worry. One of my uncles was a cop. I can get his leniency." She stepped through the gap left by the rock. "We have a very large van. Whatever you want, take. I'm getting several sets of flannel sheets and a whole bunch of snow pants. I'm not saying this is our last trip to West Lebanon, but if it snows later today or tonight, this might be our last trip to West Lebanon." Greg went to the clothing section to find pants and shirts. He carried a large black plastic trash bag and began stuffing underwear, shorts for next season, hats, gloves, anything and everything he could think of for winter into the bag as he walked by the circular racks. He made 2 trips to the van with 4 bags full of clothes before he found the camping section. Greg stopped, dead in his tracks. Set up as a display was the most beautiful thing he had seen in months. A portable camping bathtub. The red canvas frame folded out like a baby crib with strong aluminum crossbar supports. The tub was 6 feet long, 3 feet wide, and 3 feet deep. A plastic drain opened at the bottom, perfect for their house with no running water. He could set it up in the dining room, kitchen, or their bedroom next to a fire. Greg checked to see if Rebecca had seen the bathtub. She was busy on the second floor of the store walking through the women's clothes. He folded the tub and ran it out to the van. He put his clothes and new sleeping bag over the tub. He wanted to surprise Rebecca later that day. He jogged back inside, passing Rebecca on her way out with an armload of clothes. "I love this store. I really do. It's awesome." Greg went back to the camping area, grabbing 4 pair of snowshoes and walking poles. On his 4th trip into the store, he found another key item, a shotgun, a 100th-year L.L. Bean anniversary shotgun on display in a wooden glass case. He broke the display case with one of the snow axes nearby and picked up the gun. It was heavy, but perfect for hunting or defense. He went back to the van with the shotgun, the snow axe, and used his free arm to grab a handful of lanterns. "I'm going to drop this stuff in the van and head down to the other sporting goods store. You staying here or do you want to come?" Greg called to Rebecca. She poked her head over the railing. "Did you get boots? We need good snow footwear. We should get all the available sizes." "Yes, ma'am, I did. I also put several pairs of snowshoes in the van. We'll need them along with the boots." "Okay. Let's see if the other store has a better bike selection, and I want to find a smaller canoe, one I can handle on my own." "You were a picky shopper, aren't you?" he said back to her. She scrunched up her face with a smile that told him, whatever. They walked down the center of the empty mall looking at the shops. They stopped at a novelty store and loaded up on board games. The candy shop provided a quick snack of pre-packaged Belgian chocolate.
"Look at these stores. Handbags, jewelry. None of this has value anymore. And look how cute that purse is."
Rebecca sighed as she walked to the store window.
"I can finally get one of those expensive bags, and they aren't worth anything now."
Greg looked at her. "Yeah, life can be cruel. You survive a plague only to be cursed with unnecessary accessories. What a world." She scrunched her face at him again. Eastern Mountain Sports had a better bike selection and a smaller canoe. It also had better sunglasses, which Greg took full advantage.
"I love sunglasses. I could never afford them, or more than 1 pair, but I coveted all these sunglasses. Unlike your purse, these still have value. I win again!"
He smiled as he put a pair on his face, the tag hanging down his nose. They spent almost 2 hours shopping in the stores. They wanted to get home to eat lunch and unpack their haul before it got dark. Greg looked at the sky as they loaded the canoe into the truck.
"It's going to rain or snow.
Look at the black clouds coming over the mountains. Let's go through a few more stores and call it a day. We have to go to Home Depot or the hardware store to find the window sealers. I'm glad we have all these lanterns, because Home Depot and Walmart typically don't have windows. You want to go to those two stores and leave?
Sure, Greg replied. There's a hunting store up here, too. I want to see if I can get some shotgun shells for the shotgun I found.
You got a gun? For what?
Thanksgiving is coming. I owe you a turkey.
Okay, whatever. Like you're going to be able to bag a turkey. I don't like guns.
You're more likely to shoot your foot off.
Rebecca frowned.
I'll be fine.
He rolled his eyes. I'll just run into the store and grab what I need. He pulled down the back door of the van before walking to the passenger's side. Before he did, he walked to the sidewalk and picked up a large stone from the river, similar to the one he used to break the L.L. Bean entrance. He put the rock next to him on the bench seat.
I can't forget the key to these stores.
Rebecca drove down the road and turned into a strip mall, one of many that filled West Lebanon. A hunting and fishing warehouse sat at the end of the parking lot.
I'm coming in with you. I forgot my fishing stuff, Rebecca told him.
Works for me, Greg said back, picking up his rock and walking to the front door. He threw the rock through the glass and cleared the shards with his foot. Rebecca tried the door. It was unlocked.
Men, she said as she went past him.
She shuffled off to the fishing section. Greg made his way to the hunting area. It was dark inside. Greg turned lanterns on as he walked past a display. He soon located his shotgun shells. He grabbed a case of them. As he walked towards the exit, he found a trap display. He put down the shells and examined the cage. A critter entered one end, tripping a door that closed behind it, trapping the animal. It was used to humanely trap and transport pest animals. Greg would use it to trap food. He brought the shells out to the van and returned for a dozen of the traps. Rebecca sat in the warm van waiting for Greg.
There's an Orvis store in Hanover if we need more fishing stuff, and the hardware store carries fishing rods and tackle, too. I took fly fishing lessons at Orvis one summer. My grandfather loved to fish. You should see my little brother, Craig. It's all he'd do if we let him.
You only talk about Craig. What's your other brother's name?
Matt. You'll get to meet both of them. Matt is a bit of a character. Not serious like me.
Wait. You're the serious one?
You?
She feigned shock in her voice.
Yeah, me. I'm the serious one. Really.
What do you say to skipping Walmart, grabbing the window stuff at Home Depot, and going back to town?
Heck, let's skip Home Depot and get the window insulators at the hardware store in town tomorrow. It's getting late. We have to unload. I don't know why we would run ourselves ragged when we're staring down the barrel of endless time.
Greg was tired and sore from moving the furniture yesterday. He wanted to set up the bathtub and soak for a while.
Rebecca shook her head.
Let's get the window stuff. I don't want to risk a storm blowing in and dumping a foot of snow and suddenly we can't get back over here. If the hardware store doesn't have the plastic, we face a problem we don't need to face. You just run in and grab the stuff.
Perfect, Greg replied.
She turned the engine over and drove to Home Depot. The cab of the van was hot. They enjoyed the warmth during the short drive. Greg smashed the glass door with his rock, turned on the floodlight he held in his left hand, and braved the dark warehouse by himself. There was no light inside the windowless box store. He flashed the flood beam to read the aisle markers and quickly found the window insulating sheets. He picked up an entire case.
No reason to only take one package, he mumbled as he walked back through the store.
His eye caught the fireplace section. He already had plenty of tools for their fireplaces, but he inspected a carton of Easy Light logs. He moved the flashlight around before spotting a shopping cart. He placed four cases of the starter logs in the cart, putting the window insulation on top. He rolled the cart over the broken glass and out of the store. The van was running, but Rebecca was not in the driver's seat.
Rebecca?
Greg called out. He was nervous not seeing her.
Rebecca! He yelled again.
Over here! He heard her reply.
You have to see what I found!
Greg rolled the cart to the back of the van and walked to where he heard Rebecca's voice. She was standing next to two large blue porta-johns, leaning a hand against the one closest to her. She smiled from ear to ear.
"They're both empty. Can you believe that? They are both 100% empty. Let's get them into the van. This is the biggest score of the trip."
She was excited and proud of herself. Greg knew the bathtub was going to trump her find, but he let her have her moment.
"No more walking into the next house.
It's still going to be cold, but we can set one up next to the kitchen door, or off the side door of the house," Greg replied. The one flaw with their current house, something neither of them noticed when they decided upon living there, homes built in 1790 did not have indoor plumbing. Greg and Rebecca did not have an indoor bathroom, an oversight they remedied by using the bathroom in the sorority next door. When the weather turned colder, the pipes would freeze and the bathroom would be useless. The porta-john meant they could use facilities close to their home and remove their waste to another location. A nasty job, but better than letting their poop pile up. They opened the back of the van, pushed all their supplies towards the far wall, and made room for the large blue toilets. The blue plastic boxes were heavy, but by using the edge of the truck as a fulcrum, they managed to get them into the truck bed.
"That's enough work for today. Did you get the window stuff?"
"Yep," Greg replied, panting a bit.
"I have an entire case. I also found boxes of those ready start logs in case we ever have an emergency and need to start a fire quickly."
He pulled the van door down and walked around to the warm cab.
"Oh, that feels good."
Greg slumped down into the seat. He pulled salmon jerky out of his pocket, acquired from L.L. Bean, opened the bag, and offered Rebecca a piece.
"Thanks," she said.
"I got a case of this, too."
"Isn't shopping fun?" Rebecca said, as she slipped the van into drive.
"Once again, this wasn't shopping. We didn't pay for anything."
"Well, it sure felt like shopping."
They chatted and ate salmon jerky during the ride back to Hanover. They backed the van onto the yard and around the house, getting as close to where they wanted a bathroom as possible. The porta-johns were big, heavy pieces, and it took a lot of muscle to get them next to their back door. There was a small back porch extending off the back door of the cottage. Four steps led onto a concrete slab. They decided to put one of the bathrooms just off of the slab. It was going to be cold, but as convenient as an outhouse could be.
"It's an improvement, that's for sure. We'll figure something else out in the spring. But for the winter, I think we're good."
Rebecca stood with her arms crossed and a smile on her face, admiring her find.
"Okay, that's enough posing. You did well. Let's move the van and get the rest of our stuff inside."
Greg was excited to surprise her later with the offer of a hot bath. It took them an hour to unpack the van. Greg snuck the bathtub in while Rebecca pre-built a fire in the wood stove.
"I propose we continue to use the bathroom next door until the pipes freeze or the water pressure fails. Let's use the porta-potty when absolutely necessary."
Rebecca disliked the idea of an outhouse and wanted to delay its use as long as she could.
"I totally agree. I'll shovel the path to next door as long as we need to."
They sat on their couches, sifting through their items. It was 3:30. Greg was exhausted.
"We have 2 hours of daylight. Let's catch some fish for dinner. Walk down to the pond with me. We'll use jerky for bait. Come on, fresh fish for dinner."
Rebecca had an endless supply of energy.
"Seriously? No way, I'm done.
You go ahead." Greg was too tired. He wanted to organize his new stuff and sit on the couch, keeping warm next to the fire.
"It's cold, it's cloudy, it's gloomy, and I think it's spitting rain out there. We can fish tomorrow."
"I want fish for dinner. I don't want to go alone. You're my only option.
Get off your butt, put on a coat, and let's go. You're 14, not 40. Pick yourself up and let's catch some dinner."
That was that. Greg was going.
"Okay," he grumbled.
Fish did sound good. He took the fishing pole she extended to him, put on his coat and gloves, and walked out the door with her. Rebecca loved to fish. She did not know why. Fishing was outside of her other passions. For some reason, floating a line in water brought her joy. They turned left on Choate Road and walked the quarter of a mile to Ockham Pond. The grass was tall as they left the road and entered the field surrounding the water. They found a nice spot to stand and cast their lines close to the water's edge. Rebecca carried an old-fashioned wicker creel from the hunting store, and she dropped it from her shoulder to the ground next to her. "Let's fill this thing up." She threaded a piece of jerky on her hook and cast it out into the water. The red and white bobber bobbed for a few seconds, then became still. "Are we here to catch dinner, or are we here because you like to fish?" Greg watched Rebecca's stride down to the pond. She had an extra skip. He saw her expertly bait her hook and adjust her bobber. He marveled at her perfect cast and the extra distance she obtained with a practiced wrist flick. She was an angler. "I wanted to fish this afternoon, get some fresh air, catch some fresh dinner in the process. I love to fish. Is that a crime?"
Her line pulled. The tip of her rod was pointed towards the water. She waited for a sustained tug on the line or a second strike. She felt both and jerked her line into the air to set the hook.
"Got one before you even have your line in the water."
She reeled her line. The fish fought, bending her rod over.
"It's not a big one, but it will have some meat on it."
She held the fish up for Greg to see.
"That's a nice-sized perch," she commented.
"So it is," Greg said. He was enthused by her success and put jerky on his line. She stood looking at Greg, the fish dangling from her line. He cast his jerky out into the water.
"Greg?"
"Yes, you have a nice fish. I already said that. How many times do you want to say it? You caught the first fish, okay?"
"No, well, I've never kept a fish before. My dad and I would always catch and release. What do I do with it? Just put it in the creel?"
"Well, well, well. The young woman and the pond doesn't know how to finish the job." Greg's line went tight, and he set his hook in the fish's mouth by pulling his rod tip skyward.
"I guess you'll just have to watch me."
He reeled in a fish, similar in size to Rebecca's, a bass instead of a perch.
"We can do two things. Put the creel in shallow water and let the fish swim until we leave. Or we can crack them on the head with a rock and use the creel for storage.
It's cold out. We don't have to worry about the fish spoiling, and I doubt we're going to be here much longer. I'm cold and they're biting. If we get 4 or 5 fish, we'll be good for dinner, right?"
Rebecca listened to Greg's advice. She was not excited about hitting the fish with a rock or stick.
"Can you do my fish at the same time you do yours, please? I'll be able to get a line in the water faster."
"Sure. And I'll even waive the Dixon family rule. He, or she in this case, who catches, cleans."
"I don't mind cleaning them, but I don't know how. If you teach me, I'll clean the fish next time. I'm not that girly. If the fish are already dead, I'm fine with cleaning them."
"You keep catching. I'll kill and clean them as you reel them in." Greg pulled out a boning knife he took from a store that morning and began to clean the fish. He would finish cleaning one as she would catch another. They had 4 nice-sized and 1 very large fish for dinner. She hooked 3 smaller fish that she threw back. Rebecca pulled a bottle of soap from her pocket.
"Let's wash our hands here. Save our water back home. It's lemon-scented soap. Should help the fish smell."
Greg was accustomed to Rebecca having exactly what they needed. He was not surprised by the lemon-scented soap. He washed his hands in the water, cleaning off his knife as well. He picked up the creel, and they headed to their house. They walked 10 paces when they heard a gunshot. It was distant, but distinct. A rifle discharged. Rebecca and Greg froze. A second shot fired. She looked around nervously. That shot was very far away, 3 miles, maybe more. If it rang up a valley, and with absolutely no other noise to mask it, it had to be miles away, maybe 5. Greg tried to calm Rebecca.
"Could it have been thunder? There is a storm coming," she asked hopefully.
"You and I know it was a gun. A rifle, I think. I don't hunt, but growing up in the South, I know the sound of a gun. There is definitely someone else alive up here somewhere." He was looking around too, trying to figure out the direction of the shot.
"Wow, what are the odds?"
Rebecca stared at Greg.
"What should we do?"
She was rattled. She was smart, level-headed, and brave,
but she was also a 13-year-old girl, vulnerable to almost any attack from any adult. She knew her weaknesses. We go home and decide if we have any next steps. He looked at her and saw the fear in her eyes.
Hey, come on, it's no big deal. If two is better than one, then three has to be better than two, right? It's the first noise we've heard since we've been here. There can't be a lot of people. It might even be someone driving through who stopped to kill dinner. Let's go home, make our own dinner, and figure out if we want to do anything. For all we know, right now, the person could be loading a deer onto the hood of their car and be 10 miles south on Highway 91 by the time we get to the house. Remember, Canada is getting colder, as is Maine. People might be moving south for the winter. Who in their right mind would stay in New Hampshire for the winter? Only crazy people, right? He put his arm around her. We're Team Greg and Rebecca. Don't sweat it. She gave him a weak smile. Greg was a big 14-year-old. He was close to 5'10" tall, and while thin, his broad shoulders were intimidating to approach without concern. His face betrayed his youth, but his stature relayed a strong male figure. A stranger spying the teen from afar might mistake Greg as a medium-sized adult. No one would mistake Rebecca's age. When he put his arm around Rebecca, she felt better. She was an average-sized 13-year-old girl. She was maturing into a young woman. But without Greg, she was a target. They walked to the house as the sun moved over the mountains to the west. The temperature dropped quickly in the afternoons. Greg spoke as Rebecca's tongue disappeared for the first time in 2 weeks. He talked about fishing with his family in South Carolina, saltwater versus freshwater, and his brother Craig's passion for fishing. Greg tried to take Rebecca's mind off the unknown rifle shot. I have a surprise for you. I wanted to wait until I could really surprise you, but I think you need a happy surprise right now. Can you go in the kitchen and light the wood stove? I'll put it together in here. Don't peek until I call you, okay? Greg was giddy.
What is it?
Rebecca asked, suddenly excited. It's a surprise. I can't tell you. Go in the kitchen for a few minutes, okay?
She giggled and went through the door. Don't take too long. I want to get out of these clothes and into my pajamas.
Don't worry, Greg said as he opened the dining room closet and pulled out the canvas bathtub. He lit the fire in the dining room and placed the bathtub 4 feet in front of it. The large dining table was in the back left corner with the chairs resting on its top. They were tired of walking around a table and saved it for emergency firewood.
Okay, come on out, he called.
Rebecca walked through the door with her hands over her eyes.
I have my eyes covered for effect. Should I open them?
Wait, let me walk you over to the surprise. He grabbed her elbow and led her next to the bathtub.
Okay, now.
She opened her eyes and looked down. Her mouth dropped open.
Is this what I think it is?
I found it at L.L. Bean and snuck it out to the van. It's a bathtub. You solved the potty issue. I solved the bathing issue. We can take baths right next to the fire. How awesome is that? The drain unscrews on the bottom. We'll figure out how to pump the water out through a window.
Oh, my God. Can I go first? Can I go first right now? I feel so dirty. Please, please?
She jumped up and down. Of course. I'll make dinner while you take a bath. I'll stay in the kitchen. Take your time. Enjoy it. I'll go when you're cleaning the kitchen after dinner. Deal?
Anything you want. Just let me take a bath. I'll clean the dishes forever. I promise.
They ran a hose from the house next door through a window and into the tub. They filled it halfway with the icy water while 4 pots boiled on the wood stove burners. Greg tapped her on the shoulder as she watched the pots warm.
One more surprise.
He handed her a bottle of lilac-scented bath gel. There was a shop in the mall. I thought you might like this.
She looked at the bottle and then up at him. She was touched and began to cry.
Rebecca rarely showed emotion. She looked back down at the bottle, and after a pause, she thanked him.
Through all the death and horror came a person as genuine and thoughtful as you, she said quietly. Thank you, Greg.
You're the best friend I've ever had.
Rebecca lifted her head to look him in the eyes. She stood onto her tippy toes and kissed him gently on the cheek. She closed her eyes as she kissed him. It was the first time Rebecca kissed a boy.
Don't let it go to my head. You've saved my life. I'm glad I can make you smile. Let's get that water warm so you can take a bath.
Rebecca stayed in the tub for almost a half hour. Greg made his fish, waiting to bake hers until she was out of the tub. At the 20-minute mark, she asked him to boil another pot of water so she could warm the bath. She washed her hair and soaked in front of the fire. When she was done, dried off and in her pajamas, she walked into the kitchen.
Sorry I missed dinner. Wait until you get in there. It's incredible. It makes you feel like you're normal again. Really, you feel normal.
Well, the rice is kind of warm instead of hot. I cooked your fish in the oven when you called out that you were getting out of the tub. Watch out for bones. There are a million of them.
He put a plate in front of her with rice, fish, and warmed canned peas.
Veggies? You're making me eat veggies?
We've got to keep up our strength. Peas are good for you.
He spun around to leave the kitchen.
I'm out. Don't bother me for at least 20 minutes. I'm going to smell like a beautiful lilac when I'm done.
He ran out of the kitchen, coming back a minute later in his new flannel robe. He grabbed a boiling pot off the stove and went into the bathing room to warm the water. Rebecca heard him slip into the tub. She picked up her food and walked into the other room. Greg pulled his knees to his chest to cover himself.
Hey, what are you doing?
Don't worry, I'm not looking.
Much.
I'm going to eat at the table with my back to you. Let's talk about the gunshot.
I didn't bother you, he whined.
Oh, come on, you're a guy. You can lean back and enjoy yourself while talking to me, can't you?
She pulled a chair off the table and sat with her back to him. She began.
I believe we have three options.
Ignore it like it never happened. Actively seek the person or people. Or passively seek them with a signal fire.
I like the last option, she said after a pause. Being proactive is our best approach, but trying to find them is a waste of gas and time.
Rebecca was serious in her tone.
If a giant, mean-looking person comes out of the woods and up to our fire with guns and knives, we make a decision. If a child comes out, we make a different decision. But lighting a fire and luring the person here gives us options. We control the encounter.
Greg had a feeling his input was not necessary.
Let's light it tomorrow morning, she concluded before turning to lighter conversation.
Rebecca talked about how fun it was to fish again, how her dad had taken her on weekends when they could get away from the store. When she was finished with her dinner, she got up and averted her eyes for her walk back into the kitchen.
Greg enjoyed his soak. He stepped on the towel Rebecca left for him next to the tub. He dried off and slipped his robe back on. He looked down at the dark gray water filled with dirt and grime.
Man, did I need that for both my body and soul.
He put his pajamas on and pulled out one of the board games they found at the mall. When Rebecca came out of the kitchen, she sat down. They spent the rest of the evening trash-talking, laughing, and having fun. It was a rewarding end to a long day of work. They fell asleep in their twin beds within seconds of hitting the pillow. The morning sun brought a new day of challenges. As planned, they built a fire in the middle of the college green. Greg used wet leaves to create smoke, a trick he saw on a survival show. The fire sent thick black smoke high into the air. They watched from the corner office of a nearby college administration building. The office had a fireplace they used to keep warm while they waited. Greg and Rebecca lit a signal fire for three consecutive days.
22.
Paul and Hank were socked in for days. The sun shined briefly the first morning they spent at the Rutland Hotel, but the clouds rolled in later in the day and snow began to fall. It snowed for two more days. 3 feet fell before the storm was over. The front steps were gone as the snow drifted above the porch landing. They stomped a path to the woodpile, stayed in the hotel, and debated their next steps. The winds blew drifts, and the temperature outside settled into the low 20s during the day and single digits at night. Hank studied the phone book and the local area maps. Paul discovered a hotel cribbage board, a backgammon board, and dozens of puzzles. The inn